generative AI and agentic AI, they have the potential to change very foundationally the way we work inside of organizations, large and small. And to implement that level of change requires a special kind of leadership, right? If 75% of companies who are trying this are having trouble getting to a point where they can implement it, you know, in a business workflow and have it be something that improves business outcomes, that shows that this is really hard. And it is going to take a special kind of leader to kind of define what's possible.
Hi, welcome to Path to Growth. I'm Tracy Young, co-founder and CEO of TigerEye. Today, we are joined by Ron Miller, editorial director at Bold Start Ventures, and in my opinion, one of the best enterprise technology journalists. Ron, Thank you. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I just want to say before we start that, you know, I interviewed you on stage at TechCrunch Disrupt in New York in 2015. So it seems like, you know, it's kind of funny here being interviewed by you now.
Oh, I'm so excited. You've actually interviewed me several times. So this is really, really fun for me. You know, to start, could you share what inspired your recent transition from TechCrunch to Bold Start?
Sure. So at the end of August, I ended my time over 10 years actually at TechCrunch. And I moved to Bold Start and with as their editorial director. And you know, it was time for a new challenge. After a decade at the same job, you know, I wanted to try something new. I'm, you know, closer to the end of my career than I am the beginning. And I wanted to see if I could do something different before I reached the end of my career. And as I thought about what I wanted to do, I talked to a bunch of people, people I consider mentors. And one person who has been, you know, a special mentor to me said, if you're going to do something, you know, like you, that you build, or, you know, don't like kind of do a lateral move, like go to another publication and be the enterprise reporter there, you know, do something significant. And when this opportunity came along to build a blog and a newsletter and, you know, put my enterprise experience that I've built up, not just at my time at TechCrunch, but, you know, even in the years before that to work, it was something that was too good to pass up, and I made that transition.
And if our audience wants to follow you along this new adventure, tell them where they can sign up for your Fast Forward newsletter.
The URL is Fast Forward, like F-A-S-T, forward, like in, you know, a tape recorder, Fast Forward, .boldstart, that's B-O-L-D-S-T-A-R-T, boldstart. .vc. So fastforward.boldstart.vc.
Great. Let's talk about AI. So as a journalist, how do you distinguish between AI marketing hype? I mean, you look on every website, everyone's got AI something, and reality when approached by a company.
So it's not easy to do. And I think that my natural default state is skepticism. And until you can actually prove to me in some way that you can do it, then my default going in is that this sounds like, you know, maybe it's too good to be true. So the hype has to, you have to pass the hype threshold, right? And for me, it's not easy to figure out, right? Because I'm not a computer scientist. I'm not an engineer. You know, as a journalist, you know, people present you with ideas and some of them are going to kind of catch your attention and you're going to say, this is something that I haven't seen before. This sounds interesting. And if it sounds somewhat implausible, then your job as a journalist is to kind of push the, you know, the founder to describe it to you in a way that is understandable so that you can in turn write about it in a way that your audience can understand it. And over time, you know, if we're talking like broad trends, not a particular company, right? You know, you have to kind of look at trends in two ways. And one way as a journalist, you're always kind of looking ahead to what's coming, right? So you want to know what's coming. You want to kind of be on the cutting edge. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes that cutting edge is just vaporware, right? So I mean, we saw that to a large extent, you know, with Web3 and the metaverse a couple of years ago. It was like all we heard about. And then, you know, both of those things haven't amounted to much yet. So whether they will at some point in the future remains to be seen. But when it came to AI, generative AI, I should say, because I've been covering what I guess we can call traditional AI now for quite a while. But when it came to generative AI, I mean, that came out, you know, ChatGPT came out in November of 2022. And I was kind of like pretty skeptical about it for the first few months. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is just the latest thing that we're being pushed. But, you know, as quickly as March, I was just like, okay, what is this about? And then I dug into it and I, you know, tried to understand it as best I could. So you kind of have to just have a feel for it. Like, what is worth covering? And some of it is like, you know, you kind of get past the marketing and you start to see there's something there that there's some potential there that is more than just hype. And then at that point, you want to cover it. And that's what I would do.
But it sounds like it took a few months for it to marinate in and really settle in and for you to do some more research and maybe use some of the new generative AI tools for you to really believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, it did take some prompting, but I tell you, in, I don't know, it was March or April, I went to a conference, this is 23, at MIT, and Sam Altman and some other people, they weren't there. They were kind of interviewed on video, but they spoke. And when you heard how Vinod Khosla and Sam Altman were talking about this stuff, and then you heard people in the room who were working on stuff, and it just felt like there was an energy there that there was something real and that this was going to turn into something. And then once you start digging into a subject like generative AI, there's a lot to learn. So it was just like down a rabbit hole. And like I said, I'm not an engineer. I'm not, you know, a computer scientist. So I can only understand this to a certain degree. You know, I dug into it to the extent I could, and I you know, tried to be able to write about it with some, you know, authority for my audience.
And I remember November 2022 so well. I think all technologists do, especially once building enterprise software, because at that moment, it was my co-founder and I looked at each other and was like, wait, does this replace all enterprise software? And does this replace everything we've been doing in the last year? And then it's about, wait, how are we going to ride this wave and adopt this new technology and adapt our product to make it, you know, to unlock it and make it even better? So what do you see as the most significant way AI is transforming how enterprises work today?
I mean, that's a big question and a tough question. I mean, I guess I would say if you look at it, it's going to be about workflow. And I think eventually, you know, how does work flow through the enterprise? And if you think about how workflows develop, you're a business person, you've founded a couple of businesses, and you know, like, things just sort of happen haphazardly in some ways inside organizations. Like, something happens and, you know, you're like, okay, I need to approve everything before it goes out because this one bad thing happened, right? And you'll see, like, so this approval gets put in the loop, or, you know, these things kind of randomly get layered on and processes develop inside corporations. And once they're in place, it's hard to change processes. And I think that what AI has the potential to do is change how we do business and how work flows through business in a very, very significant way. And that is not trivial, but it's also not trivial to do because these processes are, you know, pretty hardened, you know, cross systems. And we saw with companies like UiPath, you know, they tried to do it, you know, in a kind of rigid way to kind of capture workflows and make them automated. With agentic AI, the potential is there to kind of take that and put it in a whole nother level of automation and really start to make workflows, you know, that are self-healing. If you think back to like something like the macros of old, you know, where you would create a macro to do something and then something would happen, it would break and you'd have to kind of re-record it. And I think that when you have something like agentic AI, the potential, and again, this is you talk about hype versus reality, because we don't have a lot of stuff in place right now that's actually doing this. But the potential is that, you know, the AI will eventually, you know, be able to say, oh, you know, this broke, and I'm going to go back and figure out where it broke and fix it. But how that plays out and how that transforms workflows and how workflows through the enterprise is still something that's playing out and is very much, you know, a work in progress.
You get the opportunity to talk to so many leaders and heavy hitters in B2B. What qualities do the, like, you know, the savvy leaders have in terms of how they talk about AI adoption? Do you see like there's a different style of leadership there?
I think that when it comes to any technological transformation, that it takes a specific kind of leader to implement substantive change, right? And so if you are trying to transform your organization, and like I was just saying, generative AI and agentic AI, they have the potential to change very foundationally the way we work inside of organizations, large and small. And to implement that level of change requires a special kind of leadership, right? Because you're going to have a couple of things that happen, I think. On one hand, you're going to have people who are really frightened of that kind of level of change for a lot of reasons. People are complicated, first of all. And if you think about how people kind of see themselves inside organizations and their roles inside organizations, for some people, information is power, right? And if your power base is based in your ability to know how to do this one thing and nobody else really knows how to do it, then you have this technology that can do just about anything, your power is going to go away. And that's scary to people, right? It's also scary fundamentally because there's a lot of hype and headlines that this technology is going to change jobs. I mean, take jobs, not just change them. So if it eliminates jobs, is it going to eliminate my job? Is it in my best interest to be cooperative here? And again, the kind of leader that has to be able to express to people that this is something that is for the betterment of how we do business, you know, it's not an easy message to get across when you have that kind of fear and pushback. On the other side of that, you have people who think this is so great that it can do anything, and then they have unrealistic expectations about what it can do and how quickly you can get it done. And, you know, we can see that it's been over two years since that ChatGPT was introduced by OpenAI. And when you look at the data, you know, there's a lot of companies still in the POC stage. There's a lot of companies that are trying to find their way, throwing a lot of money at it, but finding it difficult to get beyond that POC and into, you know, whatever comes after that, some sort of scalable, you know, in-house solution. So the leaders have to look and say, okay, what are we going to do? We should be doing this because I don't think you can ignore it. And I think that it has the potential to kind of people who do ignore it. I mean, people have called it the electricity moment. If you think back to the early 20th century, there was electricity and there was steam, and there was a debate, you know, that went on where some company owners were like, you know, no, I'm sticking with steam. And others were like, no, I'm going to do electricity. And people stuck with steam. They don't exist anymore. A lot of the ones who switched to electricity probably don't exist anymore either. But you get my point, mm-hmm. is that, you know, this is a sort of technology that is so transformational that I don't think you can ignore it. Mm-hmm. So as a leader, you have to kind of look at things and say, you know, how are we going to implement this inside our company? And I think there's like a lot of throwing stuff at the wall right now and seeing what sticks. And we're seeing several studies that have said maybe 25%, 30% of companies are getting out of POC and into whatever comes next, because they never quite define what comes next. But it's more than a POC. It's something that's in production inside the company. And if 75% of companies who are trying this are having trouble getting to a point where they can implement it, you know, in a business workflow and have it be something that improves business outcomes, that shows that this is really hard. And it is going to take a special kind of leader to kind of look for things that are, you know, where you can have success and where you can start to push forward in small steps instead of trying to boil the ocean. And I think, you know, that's up to, you know, the leaders and the managers to kind of define what's possible.
You've highlighted polarizing views on AI, you know, the hype versus practical applications. How can companies cut through that noise and focus on impactful, actionable AI initiatives?
I mean, again, you know, when you have 75% of companies having trouble doing that, defining those, that tells you that it's not easy to do, right? And again, there's so many people with so many opinions about what should be happening. But I think the best way here forward is to look for something that you can be successful at. So look for, and again, this is my opinion as somebody who speaks to a lot of, you know, enterprise companies, but look for a project that is low-hanging fruit, right? So I'll give you an example. I spoke to one CIO who said that, you know, she had been looking for different ways to implement generative AI inside her company. And they found that, you know, when they did new software releases, they would spend an inordinate amount of time creating the release notes. It would take several engineers working for several days to create these release notes. It was labor intensive, you know, to have engineers who are highly trained, who should be creating software, you know, creating the documentation so that they could explain to customers what had changed. And when they put generative AI to work on that, they put several days of engineering time. They cut that down to about a half a day and then another half a day of one engineer kind of as a human in the loop, looking at the documentation and making sure that it was okay before they handed it out off to customers. And so, okay, we're going to test it in documentation. We're going to see how many days it took before. We're going to see how many days it took after. We're going to see, you know, was it a positive business outcome? Yes. You know, everybody gets their documentation. They get it faster. It's cheaper for the organization. And it created a positive outcome. So I think companies need to be looking for whatever their documentation moment is to look at something that's easily kind of measurable and you can experiment with it. You can see if it works. And, you know, don't try to do so much that it's hard to measure. It's hard to know, you know, if it's good, it's good. And if it's not, try something else. So they talk about fail fast. I think with this stuff, it's imperative to try and find those kinds of projects that you can experiment with, look at it, see if it works, if it doesn't, move on, if it does, start to take it to the next level.
I love that example. It's so practical. You take just a scientific approach on a small subset of your process. That sucks, right? Like, engineers want to code. They don't want to write
anything.
Engineer, and I want to be like, you know, who's just so great at technical writing, but also have a little bit of marketing flavor to it. It's like, that's a rare engineer. And then you also look at what AI is really strong at. Natural language is one of them. Being able to process a lot of data that is, you know, way too overwhelming for a human to process. You look at what it's really strong at and the things that the humans don't want to do, and then see, just bake off. We always say, like, take the Pepsi challenge, just try it out, do it your old way, do it the new way, and then just look at how much time you can save. And is it valuable enough for you to swap out this one piece of the process? Because as you said, it's so hard to change. I mean, having run startups for almost 15 years now, it's just really, really hard to change old muscle memory. But a piece of it is doable, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really important that people look for things and look for, you know, something that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, you know, because we do see so many companies stuck in the POC phase, and you have to either figure it out or that it works or it doesn't. And if you don't, then you know, you're just going to be kind of going on this treadmill and never getting to a point where you can figure out whether you have something that can go into production or not.
You've spoken about AI attacking the SaaS value proposition, which we've seen in the last decade being, you know, the main pricing model for enterprise software. How do you see AI reshaping traditional SaaS models, and how can companies prepare for the shift?
So if you talk about hype versus reality, so there's a lot to unpack there. So the potential is this, that once we get to a point with agentic AI, that, you know, you have these kind of intelligent agents who can look at things like, okay, let's look at a sales motion, right? They can look at the emails, they can look at the proposals and, you know, the decks and, you know, all of the kind of collateral that goes around, you know, a sales motion and say, and recognize, oh, well, this is a potential customer and like we should probably start recording information about this customer. Now that traditionally has been done in a CRM, right? Where it's often manual. You have this database, you fill out this form, this is the potential customer. And then with some automation over time, it's gotten a little bit easier. But as engineers who hate documentation, salespeople hate recording, you know, the motion around what they do because they're paid to sell. And if they're doing administrative overhead, they're not selling, right? So the idea is like, well, maybe at some point, what do you need a CRM vendor for if you have this agentic motion that's kind of looking at what's going on inside a company and recognizing this as a potential customer and recording it as a potential customer. And then you can ask questions of that and interact with that information without having this front end in front of it, right? So what is the value proposition of ServiceNow, of Salesforce, of Workday? They've created this database of a specific type of information. They've put this front end on it, and they allow you to kind of interact with these systems of record to find the information you need. And now with generative AI, we're starting to see where you can begin to ask questions of these systems of record. But the thinking is that, well, and the Klarna CEO is somebody who came out with this idea, I think last year or earlier this year, that what do we need these big systems of record for if we can kind of begin to collect this information and interact with it, you know, using AI, generative AI and agentic AI. But, you know, I think there's a bunch of things you have to look at there. Yes, potentially you could begin to capture this information based on signals from the data, right? There's definitely potential there to do that. And in some ways, you know, Salesforce type systems do that in an automated fashion to some extent now. So because the fact that salespeople hate entering information, right? But even if it can do that, you know, all it's going to capture is what is in the digital pipeline. So if I have a meeting at a coffee shop or a conference, or, you know, I run into a potential client somewhere that doesn't have digital exhaust, you know, then it's still up to the person. It's in their head. How do you get that into the system, you know? And then that's one issue that I think about when I think about this. But then the other issues are just around, it's not as if you can take all of a company's information, put it into a data lake, for lack of a better term, and then say, okay, I'm going to just take all this information and I'm going to let AI organize it, and then I'm going to be able to ask questions of it. But there's still going to be governance. There's still going to be identity and access control. There's still going to be security. There's still going to be all these things that companies like Salesforce and Workday and ServiceNow and all these other SaaS vendors, you know, for better or worse, for the high prices, for the complexity, that they do very well, right? And that that large organizations really need. They need to have some structure. So who's going to take care of all that? You know, so when you say that, no, you're not saying that, but when people say that maybe this technology could replace you know, software as we know it. It's definitely going to transform it. It's definitely going to change it. But whether it's going to, you know, kind of remove these vendors completely from the equation, I'm not sure that will happen. Certainly, there will always be companies, I think, that want to buy instead of build, even if, they, you know, whatever the system is. And they want to be able to call a company to understand when things go wrong, to understand how systems work. So, yes, it could change it, but I'm not sure it will change it maybe as completely as some people are suggesting.
I agree with that. Do you think consumer AI tools like ChatGPT are pushing enterprise AI development? Or is enterprise AI driving its own innovation curve?
Yeah, you know, I think it's both. and that's not a cop-out. I just think it's reality, right? So ChatGPT definitely, I mean, we just had this discussion, right? It came out in November 22, and it just blew everybody's mind, right? It's completely changed the way we think about humans interacting with software. Instead of going, you know, file, blink, dump, I have to kind of push myself into the software process to make something happen. You had this system that could go get information for you and even create things for you. So, I mean, from that perspective, you know, OpenAI completely changed, you know, how we think about software. Even if you think about cloud and mobile and, you know, how the iPad transformed your own journey, you know, all of those things had a huge influence and changed how we think about software. But I don't think anything I've seen has had this kind of transformative effect that ChatGPT has had. Now, that said, you know, a lot of people have sort of caught up with that original vision. Just about any software that you look at now that's enterprise-driven and not enterprise-driven is going to have this kind of layer on top of it that at least allows you to interact with it and ask it questions in a way that just wasn't possible before this technology came along. So, yes, it pushed it, and it pushed it in the same way, like when we first had iPads and, you know, like we first had that touch interface. And I remember going to conferences and suddenly everything was touch interface. It was like, wow, this has had a huge influence on how hardware vendors think about, you know, how we interact with machines. So, you know, in a similar way, the consumer tool that OpenAI created and kind of opened up the imagination of everyone, transformed the way we think about it. But, you know, when you fast forward, if you'll pardon the expression, a couple of years, you know, there's a lot going on now. We have the cloud vendors who are involved in this. We have software vendors. We have this whole range of tools for, you know, different jobs and, you know, whether it's developers or marketing or sales, you know, just finance, every aspect of how a company gets run. And how companies kind of begin to make use of that, whether, you know, and this becomes a huge build versus buy question, right? Okay, for instance, I spoke to a CIO just this morning who created a sales tool on top of Salesforce. And I asked him, well, why didn't you just use Salesforce's AI? And he said, because it didn't really, you know, we have data and we have content, we have things that we needed to kind of build into the system that, you know, just didn't come out of the box with Salesforce. So even with their intelligence layer. So they created their own thing. So, you know, there's that kind of consumer push. Then there's like, do you build or do you buy? Or do you do this kind of combination of things like this CIO that I spoke to this morning did? And I think that's sort of what's going on across technology, across, because this is not just a, you know, obviously a technology industry thing. If you say every company is a software company, every company is a technology company now, and all of this stuff is going to impact them, and how they implement this going to depend on their own capabilities, their own, you know, what their teams need and what their, you know, IT departments, their engineering, their internal operations teams are capable of accomplishing.
You mentioned earlier that for leaders, as they go on this AI adoption journey, they do have to be cognizant and really like respectful of their team, because a lot of these tools might replace some of the jobs. And I think, you know, between OpenAI and all these researchers, they've really done a good job educating the market that AI is going to reduce and eliminate some jobs. And so I think there's like a natural fear, especially on front lines. What advice would you give either the organizations or even just the people who are so hesitant about adopting AI because of fears of whether it's going to take over their jobs or just fear of it disrupting their jobs in a negative way?
It's hard, I think, from a management perspective, unless you're really cold, to give that message without expecting some fear and pushback. And, you know, if you think about, like I said, there's stuff that you can do digitally that AI is going to be able to kind of pull threads and make decisions and draw conclusions. This is a sale. You know, this is, you know, I can see that, you know, this is a marketing message, and like, how do we want to repackage this and reuse this? But there are a lot of things that are still inside people's heads. And that's the part, I think, that, you know, you have to get people's cooperation, because not everything is going to be digital. And if you want to implement this well, you have to have a complete understanding of the entire workflow and the entire way that the business operates. So I'm actually not totally convinced that huge swaths of jobs will go away. I think the nature of jobs will change, and that people will use AI to be better employees. But, you know, when I look at AI, and I can tell you, like the other day, I was writing something. I'm not great at headlines. It's not my special strength. And I always write these headlines that to me sound like academic paper titles, you know? So I'm just like, okay, I'll you know, ask, you know, Gemini or ChatGPT or whatever. And they just come up with way worse headlines. And I'm just like, no. And I will try to explain, like, I'm looking for something compelling. I'm looking for something clickable. I want something that's going to make people curious. And they're just not good at it, or they don't understand my instructions. So the ability to write prompts and be clear and get the information that you want out of these systems is going to be a skill in and of itself. So I think that's what you have to kind of move people towards. This is coming. So how do you be good at it? How do you, not to eliminate yourself, but to strengthen yourself? Because I think, I'll give you an example. I was using ChatGPT and I used the Kayak plugin to look for flights, and it was really good. But I asked it a very unclear question. I don't remember exactly what the question was, but I asked it an unclear question and it gave me a weird response. And I understood that my question was unclear by the response. And I reworded it and it gave me, you know, a better response. So you begin to learn how to interact with this technology. And I think you're going to be better off than you are ignoring this technology or trying to hide from it, because, you know, it is the future. And however it plays out, because we're really very much on the edge of this, you're better off understanding how it works than you are, you know, ignoring it.
Right, because it's not going away. And I love you sharing how you use AI for your job. I mean, I think about the best Ron Miller articles, and it had a Ron Miller perspective. You know, you think about, you know, you attending Dreamforce, and it was like your perspective on what's happening at Salesforce that AI could never come up with. And that's what makes like a good article, a good piece of art, good piece of software. And at TigerEye, we just believe that, yes, AI will replace some jobs. There's just some jobs that doesn't make sense for humans to do when AI is like super good at it. And then for the rest of the jobs, it's going to be humans utilizing AI to supercharge themselves that will replace humans who don't use AI, just because this is now a new tool that they'll adopt and just be a better version of themselves.
Right. I mean, when we talk about agents, right, we're talking about these kind of assistants. I think agent is kind of a bad name, and maybe we'll come up with a better one as an industry over time. But Salesforce talks about them as like digital employees. You know, they're like people who work with your human employees to help them do their jobs. And when I talk about, you know, like administrative overhead, if you talk about a job like being a doctor or being a nurse practitioner in a healthcare setting, and you talk to any one of these people who work in those settings, they absolutely detest the administrative overhead. And if you could have, you know, an AI assistant that helped reduce or eliminate much of that administrative overhead, it would allow them to work more with more patients and do the work that they like to do. And I mean, when I think about just my job, as I've kind of grown into this job at Bold Start, I've been trying to put systems into place, and there's a great deal of administrative overhead as I try to kind of put my own work systems into place. And I just kept thinking, like, man, if there were an AI assistant who could like put this in Airtable for me, you know, or like, you know, capture this in Evernote for me, whatever my tools are, you know, wouldn't that be great? You know, because I'm like working and I feel like I'm running hither and yon sometimes, and I want to be writing, right? I don't want to be doing the administrative overhead, or I want to be interviewing people. And so I think everybody feels that way about their job. There's certain aspects of the job, if it went away, nobody would miss it, because it would allow you to be more time to do the part of the job that is the essence of the job and what you want to be doing in that job. And hopefully that's where we get to with this technology.
Ron, I can talk to you for another hour, but we're going to wrap this up. What advice would you give Ron Miller 20 years ago as a parting gift for our listeners?
Oh my God, that is a hard one. I would say, you know, continue to be curious. Continue to want to learn and figure things out. And I mean, that's what I try to do anyway. It's funny because I think back to the arc of my career, and my goal when I got out of school was to be a journalist. And I kind of took a crooked path to become a journalist. It took about 15 years for me to get there. And, you know, I was like a technical writer for a long time. And, you know, I felt like if I had become a journalist when I first graduated, I might have become very cynical about, you know, the technology that developed around that. But I didn't, because, you know, I came at it a little bit later and I was really curious about the technology. And I think, I guess it wouldn't be advice I'd give to me, it'd be advice I'd give to other people, is, you know, like to be curious and to have that desire to keep figuring things out, because everything's always changing. And don't get cynical about that. Don't take it for granted. And don't think you know it all, because you never do.
It's so true. I think that is excellent advice for our listeners. Ron, thanks for joining us today. I had a great conversation with you, and it's so good to see you again.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great chat.